the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast coming at you. We are recording on a Tuesday, released to the world on Wednesday. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, and I'm joined on the other line by the nation's foremost expert in Bucks and cookies, Matt Velasquez. How are you, Matt?
I'm great. I love my title. I'm not 100% sure how accurate it is, but I'm willing to accept it and enjoy it and appreciate it.
If you are a fan of cookies and eat a lot of them, you are an expert. Am I right?
I think I would qualify.
Yes, I probably qualify a little bit more than I would like to admit as well. We are going to talk a lot about Giannis, his matchup forthcoming with the Houston Rockets and James Harden. We talked a little last week about the MVP candidacy for both of those guys, and I think I want to revisit that a little bit to break it down a little bit further, just exactly what Giannis is kind of up against as he looks to win his first Most Valuable Player honor. I know we've got a lot of basketball left, but still, those two guys kind of seem like the front runners at this point. After we talk to Matt, I have an interview with DJ Wilson, one of the kind of budding stars on the Bucks team this year. He's seen a major increase in minutes and production. We talked a lot about DJ both on the last podcast and the one before. Talked to him about primarily the University of Michigan. He's a guy who played for the Michigan basketball team. He's seen them go to the national championship game in the year since he jumped to the NBA, and then this year they're very good again. So had about 5 minutes with him and chatted with him. The Bucks, since we last chatted, have played three times. They've won twice. They continue to have an undefeated record in games after a loss. They have not had a losing streak of more than one game this year. On Monday night, they pulled away from the Utah Jazz, a kind of hard-earned victory. Giannis had 30 points, but he had to work for it against Rudy Gobert, who's one of the better defensive players in the NBA. And the Bucks, this win, Matt, this one impressed me because the Jazz are a quality team. They're a 500 team. They're a team that the Bucks should beat, but 500 in the West is a little bit better than maybe it looks on paper. And the Bucks had to work for this, and they were down double digits, and they came back, and they seem to have this extra gear. And I know they've lost a couple games late too. That Suns game still sticks out of my mind, but they seem to have this extra gear. And with Thon playing well and Giannis, the Bucks just have it, man. This is what has separated them in my mind from some of the other kind of, you know, tier two to lower tier one teams in the league where they can pull away late.
Yeah, I mean, this game, you know, I spent a lot of it just being really impressed by what the Jazz were doing in general. You know, this wasn't like the Bucks were playing really poorly. It was the Jazz were playing really well. You know, there's kind of an interesting philosophical difference between Quinn Snyder and Mike Budenholzer, and obviously, you know, those two guys know each other really well. They both talked about it before the game. Quinn Snyder used to work in the Spurs system, coaching in the G League, and he used to, you know, work with and talk with and pick the brain of Mike Budenholzer a bunch. And then, you know, Bud, when he became the head coach in Atlanta, you know, brought Snyder over to Atlanta as one of his assistants, and then Snyder became a head coach of its own. But you know, Bud kind of, he has his system and he has his belief on like how the Bucks are going to do things. And, you know, whenever we ask him about opposing teams and game planning and stuff like that, like he's like, yeah, I don't watch that much film. Like his assistants watch film. Like they watch film, they come up with a game plan, like they run it by him, you know, and you know, they kind of go from there. It's a collaborative effort. But he's not, you know, focused on the other team as much as he's focused on his own team. He wants them to, you know, run their offense the way that, you know, they want it, regardless of what the defense is doing. He wants them to play their defense in a certain way, regardless of what the other team's doing. Like, this is the system. This is what works. This is what we do. And so, you know, we've seen that a lot. Whereas, like, Quinn Snyder, I feel like, you know, I don't, you know, watch the Jazz as much, but just kind of in talking to other people and just kind of looking at them, it seems like he, you know, is really set on, you know, kind of game to game figuring out the best formula for beating that other team. And you know, we've seen that in the past where anytime the Bucks play the Jazz, you know, the Jazz are really taking advantage of whatever the Bucks aren't good at. In years past, it's been really just torching them with corner threes, and which they did to some extent yesterday too.
Yeah, we saw Bud get about as mad as you've seen him when they hit back-to-back three-pointers, including a corner three. He called timeout really quickly in the first half.
Yeah, like immediately. And the Bucks don't give up a lot of corner threes. And to give up wide-open corner threes, you know, it's a defensive lapse, but it's also, you know, a product of, like, the Jazz doing things well and executing well. I mean, they were throwing screens all over the place, making the Bucks, you know, run around, work, they have to decide when to switch, when not to switch, when to help, when not to help. You know, just all these different things that were leaving shooters open, leaving lanes open. It was just really impressive. And I thought that, you know, the Bucks obviously, you know, didn't handle it perfectly. But, you know, going down at halftime 62-58, I was like, you know what? The Bucks are struggling to deal with this, you know, offense of the Jazz, but they're still right there. And so you kind of say, okay, well, maybe they'll figure it out. And they come out of halftime and immediately get down by 11. You're like, oh, well, okay. Like they really need to figure it out. And then they did. Like, you know, the Jazz were up by 11, like I mentioned, like really quickly in the third quarter. And after that, they scored like 35 points for the rest of the game. You know, actually probably even less than that. No, they scored 31 points for the rest of the game. And I don't know how many minutes that was over, but I know that they only scored 16 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the Bucks were doing a little bit more switching. You know, Bud mentioned it wasn't that much more, but, you know, it was more than they usually do. Switching 1 through 4 when Brook Lopez was on the court, letting him roam and kind of stay like on his normal kind of defensive spots. But other guys were switching. And then eventually, you know, the Jazz started to go cold a little bit. Donovan Mitchell, who was just, you know, flaming hot from three, you know, started to miss. And he had a bunch of turnovers, too. And the Bucks were able to pull it out. And it was a gutsy win. It was a game against a team that, like you said, you know, they're a good team. I mean, they're 500 now, but I think their schedule has been really hard. They've had some travel difficulties in terms of their scheduling, in addition to playing good teams. And I think at some point, they'll reach an equilibrium of, like, you know, getting to fatten up against, you know, a few of the worst teams in the East. Yeah, they obviously don't play them as often, but, you know, they're a really good team that I think, you know, could very reasonably work back into the Western Conference playoff picture as the season goes along. So, I mean, this is still a really good win. Closes out the homestand 5-1 for the Bucks, which if you can finish any homestand 5-1. That's pretty good. You would take that. Obviously, people, you know, will look back at that loss to the Raptors and think, oh, it could have been 6-0. The Bucks could have won the season series against the Raptors, all that stuff. But the Raptors played a heck of a game. They shot the lights out of the ball. You know, when you have the starting lineup for Toronto shooting like 62% and Pascal Siakam hitting threes, which he normally doesn't do. Kawhi Leonard's Kawhi Leonard. Fred VanVleet is just, you know, fireballing from out there. You know, they're a tough team to beat. The Bucks in that game had a really good, like, offensive rating. I think it was like 115 points per 100 possessions. Like, that's really good offense. They just couldn't stop the Raptors. And some of that is, you know, defensive lapses. And some of that's just those guys were shooting the ball really well. And, you know, that's just going to happen sometimes.
Jumping back to the Jazz game, Ricky Rubio went out after a pretty impressive first quarter, so the Bucks caught a break there, the Jazz losing their point guard, and that certainly didn't help their cause either. But we could talk more a little bit about this Raptors game. Like you said, Toronto just played really well, and I think what makes me nervous, and we've talked about games like this before where really good teams, there are ways to exploit the Bucks, and you get a 43.18 performance from Giannis, and you figure, you can't do better than, I mean, that's incredible. If you lose that game, it's a little bit of a red flag, because it's like, well, you're going to see a team like Toronto in the postseason. You're going to see them at home, and Kawhi Leonard is a special player, and we saw kind of what he was able to do, and it's frightening to think that there are going to be games where Giannis is otherworldly, and there's just nobody else there to pick up the pace. Although, like you said, Toronto just played really well. I guess that's still concerning to know that Toronto could, you know, exploit some things, win games in Pfizer Forum, because that could very well be the Eastern Conference Finals that we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's these two teams are really good. And, you know, we saw when the Bucks went to Toronto, I mean, it came down to a couple Malcolm Brogdon threes going down that made the difference at the end of the Bucks winning that game. I mean, those teams are very evenly matched. They both have superstar-level players. You know, Giannis, a guy who's, you know, battling for MVP of the league. Kawhi Leonard, who is, you know, when he's healthy in that conversation, has already won a finals MVP. You know, and they have really strong supporting cast, deep benches. And it just comes down to which team can execute better down the stretch. And, you know, these games are going to be close. I mean, we like I said, we saw it in Toronto where, I mean, they were really just engaging in a heavyweight battle. And like I said, Malcolm Brogdon made those threes off a couple feeds from Chris Middleton, and that was the difference. And even then, like, you know, the Raptors had chances. And then coming back to Milwaukee, you know, the other day, you know, the Bucks were down four, and Eric Bledsoe misses a three that rolls around the rim and out. I mean, if that goes down, you know, how's the game different? You know, a couple possessions later, Chris Middleton misses a wide open three, a shot that is probably like a better than 50% proposition, and just doesn't go down. And like, how does that change the complexion of the game? You know, and just it's not like the Bucks didn't have chances. It's not like they played incredibly poorly. It's just when you get two teams at that caliber, like it just comes down to having those breaks go your way. I mean, for a few seconds there, it looked like the breaks were about to go the Bucks' way. I mean, Giannis was hitting threes. He hit a three to put him up, you know, early in the fourth quarter. And Pfizer Forum was going nuts, and it just, you know, the Raptors punched back. And that's just going to, like I said, that's just going to happen sometimes.
The Bucks did take the lead briefly before, like you said, the Raptors punched back. Tell me what it's like inside Pfizer Forum this year, because by all accounts, that was, I don't know if that was necessarily the highest paid attendance this season, but certainly standing room only. We've seen a lot of sellouts in a row, as you'd expect with a new arena. But if it sounds like, and I haven't been in there for a while, but it sounds like the intensity that the team is bringing to the city of Milwaukee is reaching a pretty good pitch here, and you've got you know, crowded buildings that are into pretty much every moment. That game ended poorly, but what are you seeing from the crowds inside the stadium?
Oh, it's been great. It's been really loud. Just the fact that, you know, walking up to my seat, I'm having to like walk through standing room only crowds is just incredible. Like we didn't see that at the Bradley Center. Like even in the playoffs, like, I mean, there was no standing room to stand in. Like, that's not how the place was built. So, like, you couldn't have, like, standing room only seats. And now that you have those, like, it just adds to the excitement and the vibe. Like, when it's that packed, like, it feels more important. It feels like a bigger game. You know, and the fun thing about the Toronto game and the Utah game was that, you know, there were a ton of people there, and they were close games. And so, like, that's when you get the loudest crowds. Like, that's when you get like the electric vibe, you know, in the arena. Like, yes, the Atlanta game was pretty full, but the Bucks were up 43-14 at the end of the first quarter. They crushed them. It was like the JV versus the varsity. Like, it was not close in any way. And I know that Atlanta, you know, they're not a very good team. You know, they're rebuilding. They're trying to build up these rookies they have and all that stuff. They're missing a few of their better players. And all of that, but it just wasn't close. And it was impressive to me that there were still a lot of people in the crowd, like in the fourth quarter. And like, you know, someone mentioned me on Twitter, like, Matt, like, they don't get to go to games for free like you do. And it's like, I get it, but I've been to games where there are blowouts. And even if that blowout is in favor of your team, people still leave. People still decide, hey, I can get a cheaper beer somewhere else. It's Friday night. This game is no longer in doubt. This was fun, but now I'm going to like move on with the rest of my day. Like, and I don't blame them for that. That is a totally reasonable thing to do, because that game, nothing was going to change. You were going to watch bench units like finish out the string, which, you know, as fun as it is to watch Pat Connaughton and like four bigs in like one in one lineup, like
Jason Smith, baby.
Yeah, Jason Smith just doing work. You know, like, as much fun as that is, like I can understand that you might have traffic to beat or more fun to be had somewhere else. And you know, I think that I commend all the people who stayed, because that's cool.
The Bucks, we don't need to talk much more about that Hawks game. It was in fact a disaster for the for the Hawks. The Bucks doing doing what they needed to do on a Friday night before facing the Raptors the following night, and that's wins so big that some of the bigger players can rest, and they were able to keep Giannis's minutes in check going into the game against the Raptors the following night. It was a great performance, 5-1, like you said, on this homestand. But now it gets tricky, man. 13 of 18 on the road forthcoming, and that's probably a word, sort of the caution I still feel with this Bucks team, is they have had a lot of home games. They've had multiple 6-game homestands, and it's getting to the point of the schedule now where it's going to be hard to stay ahead of the Raptors. They're still technically a half game behind the Raptors and ahead in win percentage for the best record in the East. But this is going to be a brutal test, and I don't know what success will look like if 500 even over the next 18 games. If that's okay. I mean, I would think that the Bucks would want to do better than that, but I don't know, man. This is going to be an interesting run of games. What do you think coming up here in the next few weeks?
Well, the good thing for them is that even though they're on the road, they do get a lot of games against sub-500 teams. So I think in that stretch, obviously it starts in Houston on Wednesday, which that's going to be a tough test. Houston's playing fantastic. James Harden has been incredible. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, I'm sure. But then you're at Washington and at Atlanta. Those games, regardless of venue, should be wins. I mean, I know Washington's playing maybe a little bit better, but since John Wall got hurt, get into a groove of Satoransky and Beal and all that. But the Bucks, still project as a better team. Miami at home, Miami always gives the Bucks fits. And then at Memphis, a team that beat the Bucks earlier this season, so the Bucks will have a little bit of fire going into that one. But looking further, you have Orlando, a winnable game. You have Dallas at home, winnable game. Charlotte at home, winnable game. OKC on the road, that'll be tough. That's a team with the best defense in the NBA. Paul George is playing great. Steven Adams is playing some all-star caliber basketball, and Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook. Detroit, Toronto, Washington, Brooklyn, Washington again. I mean, three times against Washington in this stretch. I think you get the picture. There's just a lot of winnable games there. And not just winnable games, they should win. So as hard as it is, as brutal as the schedule is, I think they can still, put up a good record between now and the All-Star break. 12, 13, 14 wins. None of those are out of the realm of possibility. Maybe more, just depending on how things shake out. Not going to be perfect over that stretch by any means. But getting a dozen or more wins is in the realm of possibility, and that would bode well heading into the break.
Of course, the most important thing is when they have time off in Orlando to get some sort of content surrounding Splash Mountain, Brook Lopez, on Splash Mountain. I've got to think there's going to be some time to jet over to Disney World and take in some of the tourist traps. That is something I am very much looking forward to, Matt. I hope you can make that happen for me.
I'm going to try my best. That back-to-back Miami then at Memphis, they never, teams, if you're not the Chicago Bulls, teams don't practice after a back-to-back. It's just the thing around the NBA. You have a back-to-back, there's no practice the next day. So that Thursday, going from Memphis to Orlando, that definitely leaves some opportunities open. So we'll see what happens. They'll obviously be in Orlando for an extended time. They have Thursday the 17th, Friday the 18th, and then they play the Magic on the Saturday the 19th. So you have a couple off days there. They'll probably practice on the 18th. But I'm totally open to all of that. I think that'd be pretty cool. We'll see what we can do.
Before we look ahead to this battle with the Rockets, the Harden-Giannis matchup, wanted to get your thoughts on a couple players. You wrote about George Hill at jsonline.com earlier this week. I've been pretty impressed with him and curious to see how his role would evolve, and I think we're seeing exactly what could be considered a best case scenario, a veteran presence who seems to be making other guys better. Like, it seems to be working, and obviously he's not getting a ton of minutes off the bench, but he is contributing when he's out there. And after that, some thoughts on Thon Maker, because we saw him play a really good game again Monday night against the Jazz, and there are times you watch Thon and think he could still become a pretty strong starter, and and a pretty regular, you know, a guy who does get starters minutes and contribute. I don't know if that's going to be with the Bucks, but do you still see Thon on sort of this progressive, you know, is he getting better and better, or is this just flashes with him? And then where do you see George Hill fitting in? I mean, it seems like things have gone really well with him.
Yeah, I think Thon has definitely been getting better. I mean, there's always the issues with consistency and stringing together, you know, multiple good games. But more often than not, he has been a positive for the Bucks. I mean, at the very least, his defense has been a major boost, to the point where guys just expect that when he's on the court, you know, good things are going to happen defensively. Giannis was even saying as much yesterday after the game against the Jazz. Just like, all right, yeah, we're not worried about him on defense, but when he makes, like, especially corner threes, or when he can get things going in the paint, and just add some points offensively, then that's just kind of, you know, the cherry on top, and guys get really, really amped, you know, and get a lot of energy just from when he makes shots, like more so than when other guys score. It's kind of like in college basketball, like when the walk-ons score, like guys go nuts. Like, you know, it's kind of like that for the Bucks. Like when Thon is like providing offense, and doing so efficiently, you know, guys kind of feed off him, and the crowd feeds off him. He got us like a, you know, almost like a standing ovation yesterday when he came off the court after scoring 15 points, 5 rebounds, and playing a key role. I mean, as I wrote in the story mostly about George Hill, I mean, Thon's got the best numbers in terms of on-off splits. He, like, when he's on the court, like the Bucks' defensive efficiency is at its best, and that's been impressive to me this season. Like, especially because last year, it seemed like he was always caught in the middle, like not sure what to do on defense, where to be, how to handle pick and rolls. And like this year, he's just very comfortable. He's in a scheme where at first he kind of trended back to his old ways of doing things, and really wants to be aggressive and get out on people. And you know, but now, like in Bud's scheme, it's like, okay, like you drop, you defend the paint. You do it well, you stay strong, you stay vertical, and like, you know, you defend the rim. And sometimes, you know, they employ a little bit more switching when he's out there to take advantage of his athleticism and versatility. But for the most part, he knows what he's doing, and he's doing it well. I've been impressed. I still haven't looked it up. Maybe I mentioned it last week on the podcast, but I don't know how often Thon has defended Andre Drummond from the Pistons, but I feel like Drummond like never scores on him. Like, and Drummond is one of those like really big, like traditional centers who, you know, has a lot of like physical size over Thon in terms of just like weight and bulk. And you would think that he would just dominate him on the way to the hoop, but that hasn't happened. Like, you know, Thon's holding his ground and isn't letting guys score. And so that's just been really impressive from him. You know, he's an energy guy. He's kind of a glue guy. And much in the same way as George Hill, in the sense, you know, they're both glue guys. Like, George Hill isn't gonna do like anything really that you're talking about like the next day. Like, he just does little things. He'll like run behind Donovan Mitchell in transition and poke the ball away. You know, he'll go down on the floor for a loose ball. He'll like, you know, fight for an offensive rebound that he has no business grabbing, and you know, make it so the ball stays in the Bucks' possession. Just like things like that, you know, playing good defense. You know, he's second to Thon defense and team defensive rating while he's on the court. In the minutes he and Thon are together on the court, I mean, I haven't looked at what those numbers are, including the Utah game. But going into the Utah game, those two had played together for 92 minutes, and the Bucks had a defensive efficiency of 86, which is like incredible. It's a small sample size, to be sure. But you know, 86 points per 100 possessions for the opposing team while those two guys are in the court is, you know, that's really good. And then sure, maybe a lot of that's against bench units, because obviously they're bench players, so they might get more minutes against bench units. But if you can win those bench minutes, doesn't matter how you do it. Like, you want to win those and get those back, get the, you know, the ball back to your starters, with either the game, you know, at the same margin it was, or, you know, in a better position. And so they're really fulfilling that role, and it's just a huge kind of luxury for Mike Budenholzer, just the guys that he has on his bench and the depth that he has. Night in and night out, you can get strong performances from really anybody.
These are the types of things that happen when you have a special season, because not that they didn't think George Hill would contribute, I'm sure they did, but that the sort of headline with that deal that brought him to Milwaukee was were the contract gymnastics with the trading of Matthew Dellavedova and John Henson, but to get him back in that deal, a guy who's not going to probably be here beyond this season, and have him contribute at that level, like you said, another option. These are the types of things that happen to teams that are really going to do crazy special things. Let's get to the main event Wednesday night. The Bucks are in Houston to face the Rockets. Last week I threw out that Giannis was sort of the clear-cut frontrunner for MVP, and I know a lot of Bucks fans feel that way, but that's probably an overstatement, because there are a lot of people in Houston who feel like James Harden, who won last year's MVP, is the heavy favorite to do so again this year. Saw someone, believe a team executive, calling him maybe the best offensive player of all time, which I'm sure means he's never heard of Wilt Chamberlain, and that's fine. But looking at the numbers, what I didn't realize is that Harden has scored 3 more points per game this year than he did last year. He's up to 33.7 points per game, a staggering 8.7 assists to go with that. It's just amazing how he's able to fill up both categories. 5.9 rebounds, 2 steals a game. He shoots 44%. He's 37 minutes a game. I believe that's tops in the NBA or near the top. So he definitely sees the floor a ton. Giannis, by comparison, 26.6 points per game, so markedly lower there, but obviously more rebounds, 12.6, really good number from him there. 6 assists a game, 1.3 steals, he shoots 58%, not nearly as good from three-point range, of course, and fewer minutes, 33 minutes a game. So they're different players, and you're going to see Giannis win some stat categories and Harden win others. Side by side, I still think Giannis is the favorite because the Bucks are the better story overall as the team with the best record in the East. Rockets right now are 23-16, Bucks 28-11. But I don't know how this ultimately shakes out. If they stay on the same trajectory here, both make the playoffs, what do you think? Would you still see? Do you think of Giannis as a front runner, or is this like neck and neck? How do you compare them?
I mean, I think they're right with each other, and this is actually something that I'm writing about. Heading into the Rockets game on Wednesday, so this is a perfect time to talk about it. By the time you all are listening to this,
check it out on jsonline.com. There you go.
You can also buy a newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can get it online. You can get it on the paper. You can do whatever you want. It's there for you.
You know, I don't even know what you're talking. Newspapers? I don't know what you're talking about. you're out of my area now.
Yeah. So you know, but I think that those two guys are really close. I think if you polled a lot of people, you get votes for each side, I think Giannis would probably still have the advantage for now. But if James Harden keeps doing what he's done over the past 13 games, then forget about it. He's the MVP. He's everything. He has been just marvelous over the last 13 games. I mean, 13 games is a pretty sizable chunk of games, and in that span, he's playing nearly 40 minutes. He's shooting over 40% from three. He's averaging 40.2 points and 9.6 assists, 6.8 rebounds, 1.9 steals. I mean, it's just incredible. And he's getting
that's unsustainable, though, don't you think? Like, I don't think he can keep that up.
I mean, you would think so, but it's hard to even imagine sustaining that for 13 games. In all of those games, he's scored more than 30 points and had 5 or more assists. Like, that's just crazy. It's incredible. He's getting to the free throw line a lot, and I know people have strong opinions about, you know, how he gets to the line, and it's boring to watch him play because all he does is shoot free throws and all that stuff, and that's fine and good. You're allowed to feel that way, feel the way you feel, but, like, it's still impressive, to me at least, just the way that he's able to use his body and get those foul calls and finish through contact. The one big thing that you can say about him over Giannis is that, you know the one way, really, that Giannis is going to score, and it's going to be in the paint. I mean, he's going to drive, he's going to dominate you, he's going to dunk on you, he's going to, you know, do a Euro step for a layup, you know, things like that. And every so often he'll get a game where he's feeling confident with his mid-range shot, or, you know, in the Toronto game the other day, he got confident with his three. He made 3 of 5. But those are few and far between. And James Harden, he can beat you however he wants or however you let him. If you're trying to really close out Harden the three, he will drive. He, you know, just has really great body control and can finish and can get fouled. And he, not just does he get fouled, but he's a really good free throw shooter. You know, it's not like, you know, Giannis is not a great free throw shooter. There are certain games where he, you know, will make a bunch and he'll be really efficient there, and certain games where he'll be like 4 of 11. You know, Harden gets to the line and he makes them. I mean, a couple games ago, he was 21 of 27. You know, before that, he was 14 of 14. Well, on Monday night, they played the Denver Nuggets and he was 12 of 15. I mean, that was like, you know, pretty standard night for him. But then, of course, if you are going to let Harden get, you know, be in his isolations with a defender, and that guy's going to sag off a little bit to guard against the drive, he is going to just cook you and use that tremendous dribble that he has to set up, you know, his signature step back three, or, you know, just a pull up, whatever. And obviously, you know, yes, like there was that step back, they stepped back twice and definitely traveled and whatever. And that's fun to make fun of, and I enjoy the memes, and it's fine. But when he pulls out the step back three, I mean, it's just a lethal weapon. I mean, we saw Brook Lopez pull out just a nasty step back three on Monday night against the Jazz. Basically, almost like a one legged step back fading thing, and it worked. It was a beautiful shot. And it's especially, you know, crazy to see a 7-footer do that. Now just imagine like him doing that multiple times a game and how comfortable you feel with that. And I would guess that most people would be like, eh, that was fun that one time, but like we can't do those all the time. And James Harden's like, hold my beer. So hold my beard. There you go. So, you know, I'm looking forward to just watching him play in person and just trying to figure out how the Bucks try to handle him. You know, also, you know, the Bucks are a team that defensively they allow the most threes in the NBA, and it hasn't come back to bite them because they have the best defense inside the arc of anybody. Teams shoot a really low percentage on 2-point shots against the Bucks. You know, but you know, I'm interested to see if it becomes just a 3-point shootout. You know, with the Rockets just throwing up threes all night, and especially Harden. You know, I mean, Harden averages, you know, a really big number of threes on his own. I mean, he's attempting 12.4 threes a game on his own. So, you know, how many threes does the Bucks need to take to try and keep up? And can they keep up? Can they make enough to keep up? And I think that'll be a really fun one to watch.
Do you get to vote for MVP? Is that one of your perks?
I did last year. I did. They invite a panel of media members. I think it's like 100 people. And last year I was invited to be one of those people. Usually they try and get at least one person from every market. So I was representing like the Milwaukee market, the Milwaukee vote. And it's almost kind of like an electoral voter or like a senator or something. I don't know how you want to liken it.
We don't want to talk about government on this podcast.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope. So, but yeah, so I did that, and I definitely voted for James Harden last year because he totally deserved it.
So Giannis will be trying to impress Matt Velasquez and others, I suppose, on Wednesday night when the Bucks take on Houston. That game will be nationally televised, getting a little bit of buzz, a little bit of hype, and will be fun to watch two top MVP candidates square off. I'm going to move now, a bit ado to Matt, and move into my interview with DJ Wilson.
The Bucks MVP of the last month, baby? Maybe?
Maybe, yeah. Now, I talked to DJ before he got hurt or left a game with a hip pointer, missed the game against the Jazz, was out mostly against the Raptors. But anyway, I, again, very important questions. We're not asking much about the current his current play. And I want to, you know, in reading up on him, I guess I didn't realize how much this underdog story really has started. You know, it's got some pretty deep roots in high school. At one point, he was like the fourth leading scorer on the team. He had a couple back injuries, was in a back brace, missed a ton of time. Really had some late recruitment buzz that picked up as a senior. He did end up choosing Michigan. He was playing in the Sacramento area, became at the time, the first Sacramento area product to, it's not where he was from originally, but that's the first Sacramento area kid to go to Michigan. He was a redshirt sophomore when he came out to the NBA, and if he had stayed, imagine how good Michigan would be. I mean, they went to the national semifinal or national championship game last year. They were undefeated, one of the best teams in college basketball this year, but he was considered a project kind of throughout, and he's just gotten better and better and better, and now to the point where he's kind of a key defensive figure for the Bucks. So it was cool talking to him. Didn't have much time, only 5 minutes with him. He was on his way out to another commitment, but it was cool. He seems like a pretty cool dude, Matt Velasquez.
Yeah, no, he's definitely somebody who has his own distinct tastes and personality, and he owns it, and that's cool.
So we will say goodbye to you. Thanks for joining us. We're going to move into DJ. We'll see you later, Matt.
All right, talk to you next week.
I want to hear about where you were when Jordan Poole hits that shot last year in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Were you watching it live? And
yeah, I was watching it live. I was actually on FaceTime with Karis and Zach and Derek. I believe Derek Walton and Zach.
Yeah.
And we're just all on, I think, FaceTime, yeah. And Karis was like, man, he's about to hit it. And we're like, all right. And we're like, who? He's like, JP, watch. Shot goes up, goes in, and we all go crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It was cool for us to have a Milwaukee kid do it. We didn't have any teams in the tournament.
Yeah.
I'd read that you're the first kid from Sacramento to go to Michigan, and you had kind of an interesting group of schools that were after you. So How did you end up there? What was the thought process?
I grew up in the Bay, so Cal was a big school. They started recruiting me, and then I moved to Sacramento during high school or middle school.
Okay, so, okay.
They're a school of my interest just because I was a Bay Area kid and whatnot. I didn't really have a whole lot of Pac-12 offers. I had some of the smaller ones.
Yeah, like Cal?
Yeah, like Cal. I didn't have UCLA, Arizona. I had Washington State, Washington, New Mexico.
Sure.
But Michigan, they just came about kind of late during the process. Coming to my senior year, went on a visit, fell in love. Loved what Beeline and the staff was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And then I committed on my visit.
Bucks Media Guide says your middle name, Jalen, is after one of the Fab Five. Is that just coincidence, or did you have, like, some family connections to Michigan?
Nah, not at all. It was just my mom's favorite player growing up.
Sure, sure.
And so she named me Jalen, and then my middle name, and then somehow I wore number 5, too.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Crazy, yeah.
I read about an injury you had in high school. I had to wear a back brace for a while. I think it was your junior year, if I got that.
I actually did it twice.
Oh, wow.
I fractured the left side of my spine.
Okay.
My junior year, or going into my junior year, I had to wear a back brace for 4 months, 23 hours a day.
Oof.
I was out for 7 months, and then I came back. A couple months later, I did it to the other side, the
Damn.
Same process. So I was out for a little over a year, didn't play basketball and whatnot in high school. So I didn't play a whole lot of AAU ball or high school ball.
Yeah.
And then I played my senior year, and that's kind of when I got all the buzz and whatnot. But I had committed to Michigan before that, the summer coming
really?
Into that. So.
I read about this game against Ivan Robb, who played in the Pac-12 and obviously was a very good player. And that sort of reignited interest in you. I mean, if that game doesn't happen, is it a totally different story? Or, like, what do you remember about that game? How did that change your trajectory?
Going into that game, we played summer coming to my senior year, I believe. I did well. And then I had committed to Michigan before the next time we played them during the regular season. Probably the worst high school basketball game I've ever played.
Oh, really? Okay.
At Cal Berkeley, our first regular season matchup. And then we saw them in the playoffs in the open division. I had a great game. I think I had like 30-10-6. And then they ended up winning. The last two matchups I had already committed, so.
Okay, so it wasn't like it changed anything for you already committed.
Yeah.
But I saw that because you'd been injured. I think you were the fourth leading scorer as a sophomore or junior in your high school team. So this isn't new to be somebody who kind of has to work his way up.
Nah, not at all. And that's why, you know, I enjoy everything I go through, all the adversity and the whole process and whatnot. You know, I had to go through it throughout high school and then in college, too. Redshirt in my first year and then not playing at all my redshirt freshman year.
Right.
So it's nothing new to me. Just, you know, you kind of have to adapt faster at this level because it's a whole another beat. So I believe that, you know, I'm well on track and
When somebody says project, that you're a project, do you see that as a pejorative? Is that a negative term to you, or is that just how you would see it? I mean, how do you feel about that terminology?
I mean, I think it's another word for, you know, potential, but I feel like, you know, those are kind of dangerous words.
Sure.
A lot of times you see those guys with those labels that kind of don't fulfill that, what they're supposed to be. So, you know, I know I'm willing to put in the work and whatnot, and I will for sure, you know, fill out what I'm supposed to be as a basketball player at this level, and I feel like I'm starting to.
There's this game this year against the Pistons where you're sort of famously on the floor there for defense, and you and you're defending Griffin on these last three-pointers, and people kind of looked at that as your breakout game. I mean, did you see that as a breakout game, or do you not see yourself as necessarily having a moment? You're just getting progressively better.
No, I think I'm just getting progressively better day in and day out, game by game, getting more comfortable and whatnot. Honestly, this kind of feels like my rookie year in terms of, like, playing. But when you go against guys like Chris and Giannis every day, going against guys like Blake Griffin and Anthony Davis, not really, you know, something out of the unusual. So
it still has to be kind of satisfying that you've kind of gotten to a point where you're a regular part of this, you know, what the Bucks are doing on a day-to-day basis.
No, definitely. But it's also something that I've been working towards for, like, the last year and a half. Unfortunately, I was hurt in the beginning of the year, but I knew I was going to get back. And I think now is just the beginning.
All right, man, I appreciate it. Michigan's got another good year, so you got more to watch this year.
Oh, yeah,
huh?
We're going to the chip. We're going to win the chip.
Yeah, go they blue. Got one more step.
That's all we got today on the Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Please find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Leave us a rating, a review. Let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe, at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. on Twitter. Pretty easy to find. Matt Velasquez on Twitter as well, covering the Milwaukee Bucks for JSOnline.com. You should also know we've got tons of other podcasts you should be checking out. We have new JS Journal Sentinel Badgers and Brewers podcasts that landed on Tuesday morning. New episodes of those, kind of an off-season check-in on the Brewers, and then the Badgers talking about basketball and football there. Highly regarded quarterback recruit Graham Mertz, who's coming to Wisconsin next year, just had a really big weekend at an all-star showcase, so he's got Badger fans buzzing again. Talked to Jeff Patricus, Badger beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel there, and on the Brewer podcast, talked to Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter, as the Brewers getting closer to their on-deck event. Should be a sellout this year for the first time, and made a couple trades in the recent past, and some rumors about Madison Bumgarner, Giants ace, so that's kind of exciting. We talked about that this week. Again, new episodes there. Find those on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. You can also find the Green Bay Packers Journal Sentinel podcast. That's not me, but Tom Silverstein, Jim Ozarski have a lot to talk about after the Packers announced that they were hiring Matt LaFleur as head coach on Monday night. So a lot for you to find, and give it all, check it all out. It's great. Subscribe to it so that when those new episodes drop, sometimes it's intermittent with the Brewers in the offseason here and the Badgers, you can get that right away. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Matt, DJ Wilson. We'll chat with you again next week.